turned on again. Off.
Now, come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all.
N-E-R-D up. N-E-R-D up.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson.
Nerd up.
Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, and welcome back from the holidays. I'm telling you guys, it's been a long time. Everybody's opened their Christmas presents, their Hanukkah presents, their Kwanzaa presents, their Festivus presents, their whatever else they opened. I think there's an Arbor Day holiday coming up. You can open up your Arbor Day presents as well. But either way, we're back. And the Nerd Up Podcast is ready for another fantastic year. 2017 is just going to be awesome. And we're going to start it out right. I got a great show coming up for you here in just a moment. Once again, we got to do a little shout out to our one of our sponsors, the Eagle Theater in Robinson, Illinois, and also in Clinton, Illinois. And they've got a new one opening, and I can't remember where it is now. Oh, well, they'll have to kick me up to find out where they're going. All right, now, we got our special guests, the first ones of the year. And let me tell you, folks, you're in store for some fun. We've got Charles D. Moisant. We've got Brian K. Morris, and they're going to join me, Gil T. Wilson. It's the middle initial show. We've got a great thing going on. We've got the Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove is a comic book thing coming up that they're going to talk about. Also, remember we talked before about History of Police in America. That's also an ongoing project they have. Brian also has a book called Sky. I'll let him tell us. Skyman Tales of Sky. It's something really cool. It looks like really Golden Age comic book hero type thing.
What a great host you are. You're like the bat.
So,
I mean, we should play D&D with you.
Oh, that's an idea too. I like that. We'll just have to trust you on your dice rolls, though. So that's the problem. I can't verify.
No, because we'd actually have the video on, so we could see how hideous we all look.
Just assume critical failure.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah every
What's
time.
What's the name of that Skyman thing?
Yeah, what is that?
The original Skyman Battles of the Master of Steam. But we'll get to that, Charles, after we talk about your news project, The Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove. Charles, what would you like to say about that?
I'm eating steak.
Ooh, and it's podcast steak.
I better put it down. Damn, I'm eating steak with my hands. I'm going feral like these steak.
Charles, last time I talked to you, you were eating. What is this?
That's because I eat nonstop.
Oh, okay. Well, makes sense then.
Yeah. I have food teleportating around and it circles me. I weigh more than a neutron star, but it's on another dimension. So I look normal in this universe.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, makes sense, I guess, if it works for you. All right, so tell me, what's the secret behind this? What are we doing with the Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove?
We're making you all buy it.
And why would we want to?
Because it's cool and it's scary.
Now, the scary part is where you got me. Let's hear more about that.
God, I've had a mouthful of food. Thank goodness, right?
Yeah. Tell us about it, Charles.
Yeah, the Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove is based off of the actual cemetery, loosely based, Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. It is reportedly one of the most haunted cemeteries in the entire nation. A lot of people have heard about Bachelor's Grove in many circles. It was amazing when I was on the East Coast and I mentioned the title name. People were like, wait, is that haunted cemetery in Illinois? Now, what Brian and I, we've done is we've crafted a larger universe around it. So basically, it's you know, to use Buffy the Vampire language, it seems to be a heck mouth for evil and dark beings. We have vampires, we have ghouls, we have mummies, flesh constructs, demons, devils. Demons, devils, goth girls, punk guys, ghosts. But the werewolves tend to avoid Bachelor's Grove for some reason.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We got discovered in it. What we wanted to do was create a series that had the feel of EC without really ripping off the EC.
Ooh,
and play
local
legends and just make a twist out of it. And as we got on, a paranormalist, Kadrosha Ona Carol, was like, I got to be in. She's called Kadrosha Ona Carol, Queen of the Paranormal. And you can look her up online and find out all the neat psychic stuff she does. She's actually trying for the Guinness World Book of Records to be the first person who does ghost hunting for a living. And then within the comic book, she does ghost hunting for a living. And, yeah, well, we'll see that. That'd be cool to have a comic.
Right.
The other thing really neat is not only do we have Brian K. Morris spearheading the project, working with me with writing and creating. The great thing is we have pros and amateurs all contributing to the book across the country.
Oh, wow.
We have Steve Geiger, who's has been an art director for Marvel Comics. Cynthia Martin, who's been on BBC and a whole bunch of other stuff. She also did Roller Derby Drama for me, but that's a whole different series.
She also drew Star Wars for Marvel.
Yeah, Star Wars for Marvel. Jordy Lynn Nye, a Myth Adventures fan. Lynette Eklund, who experimented with writing, and she is one of the top creature makers for Hollywood. You heard of Jurassic Park.
I've heard of that.
Well, those are some of her dinosaurs she built. Live action suits. You heard of Species?
Oh, I've heard of that one, too.
Well, guess what? Worked on that. And we may even have by Philo Barnhart, who's one of the creators of Little Mermaid. I'm not sure if you've heard of that either.
Oh, yes.
So we got these heavy guns. And then we got, interns like Dominique Whitney, who is, out of college and, wanting to try to make it and make art her career. And, it's just amazing the multitude of people, male, female, different walks of life, races, cultures, religions. The fun thing about this book is it's basically, imagine if a whole bunch of artists got together at a coffee shop and writers and decided to jam on a project.
Wow, yeah.
Basically the mentality of this. And I've just been enjoying it. Brian, would you like to put in your words, because you're like the professional guy and I'm like the wacky art guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Charles did touch on some of the people that we are using and working more with the writers. I have worked with a few familiar names to this podcast, like Todd Black.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Todd has submitted a script to us.
I call him Todd African American.
And I'm sure he loves it. Also, Kenny Sills, who wrote...
Kenny,
yeah, who wrote that charming book, Tattoo, A Beautiful Sin.
Tish Masterson hates him.
Yes, because he spreads evil in the world.
Oh, well.
But that got him a raise with us. But anyway, we have a number of very talented, enthusiastic people writing and drawing about this cemetery, which, by the way, Charles took me there today.
Oh. Oh, wow.
20 degrees, I'm such a jerk.
Charles said, let's film some video for our Kickstarter campaign. Hey, it was warm yesterday. Let's go the day after. And people know that I've done acting. I have my own internet movie database page.
Wow.
Yes, I do.
I was just in that movie, Divergent.
I've been in three films.
Damn, because your fan is important.
I guess I am now. But
living impotent.
But anyway, I give the greatest performance of my life, as you will see when this video sees the light of day. I am playing the part of a man who is not freezing his extremities off.
Wow. And
but I do play a man who is dressed totally inappropriate for the weather.
Yeah, he's nude.
And this year's Oscar goes to...
You don't get to see that version.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, really. Well, that that's kind of neat. You get to visit you visited the actual site you're writing about. So I got to jump in and ask, what spurred this? Was it the site spurred you to write it, or did you want to write and then, hey, there's the site we can write about? Which one came first?
Well, a little bit of longer history. 10 years ago, I worked with a gentleman by the name of Wayne Seeley, who owns Mystery Manor in Omaha, Nebraska. It's a 33-year-old haunted house. Years ago, in its third season, I acted as a mad scientist, and we ended up getting on cable TV. We ended up on Good Morning America. A whole bunch of crazy stories, and that could be a whole other subject. But back in 05, basically wanted to develop a comic book. Well, we reconnected, and what was amazing was he kept my lab coat from all those years. When he saw me, he's like, Charles, is that you? We still have your lab coat. Just put it on and let's get acting again. It was just amazing. Like only a day went by, even though it was over 20 years. So I got back into the acting. And then I pitched him the idea of an anthology story loosely based off of Mystery Manor. So we developed something and did 6 issues, and it ran its course. And did really well. Sold over 20,000 units of the first book.
Wow.
Nice.
By the time of the third book, some things changed hands, with merchandise and things. Then it kind of ran its course, which was fine.
Okay.
And we're still friends, and we still go there. Well, there was one story I wanted to do about a vampire. And basically, the story is, without giving too much away, a girl's attacked by a vampire, and then we see her soul raises from the body, and then it's trapped tethered to the body, watching the body commit atrocities. And what if all vampires are like that? Which actually means they're just these aberrant, horrific beings, not these beautiful, pretty sparkle things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not even like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but they are horrific, aberrant.
Mm-hmm.
They are evil.
So, the way they should be, really.
Yeah. I batted it around, and I know Bachelor's Grove, and I thought, you know, it'd be interesting to do stories of Bachelor's Grove, but I didn't want to do the real stories, I mean, per se, because they've already been written, and we're not even plagiarizing. And Brian, I met him, and we're just talking, he's like, develop a world. I'm like, what? Develop a universe, Charles. I'm like, oh my God, Brian, what do you mean? Well, think about this. So we started developing base rules. Demons are always ethereal. You know, that's why they possess. Devils are real, you know, solid as you and I, so that's a little more dangerous.
Okay.
And what about sociopaths? What about ghosts? What about this? So then we started to develop writing rules. My thought is, hey, let's just invite other people to do this. Let's turn this into this big guided anthology. But even though it's an anthology, it's a loosely based story. So each issue together becomes a deeper story. And then we started to develop heroes. Kurosha Ona 1, like I said, Queen of the Paranormal, she's like, oh my God, I'm on board. Put me in your book. So we started researching, you know, about what she is and what she does and all that. So she has full color power. We have Ron Fitzgerald, Master Illusionist. He's a fascinating gentleman. So he's within it. And then we created a sociopath who basically kills monsters only because it gets her pleasure. And nothing else, you know, she really cares about. She has no remorse.
Okay.
And I based the look off of two people, which was kind of interesting. My daughter and the young woman who has a martial arts training thing in Gulfport, Mississippi, Deanne. And she teaches Taekwondo, and she's a medic in the military. So now we've kind of got these full, rich characters, and it's just getting interesting. Hey, Brian, take over for a moment to talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, gladly. And it's been kind of fun for me because I'm doing the scripting on these stories. In fact, we saw Ron today. We talked to Kadrolsha on the drive back from the cemetery. And then when we got here, Linda Lee King, who is a fantastic novelist, we were talking about her character. So it's been a Silver Phoenix-y kind of day. What attracted me to this, aside from Charles' enthusiasm, when we met at NerdCon, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you were there.
I was.
Wait, do you remember me then? Oh,
yes, I was standing with you talking when I yelled out what UNCLA stood for.
Wow.
It meant that much to me.
Wow.
But no, it's like, it's been fun. And it was really a challenge about writing the characters, particularly Ron and Kadrolsha, is that they are real people and obviously want to have a say in how they are portrayed. So it challenges me to be true to their personalities or how they would like to be portrayed in these stories.
Right.
But it's also very comfortable for me because it's like, oh, I don't know how they'd react. Hey, Kadrolsha, what would you do if? You know, so that's been real darn handy. Plus,
Yeah,
it's made my job considerably easier.
It almost feels like cheating, right?
Yes. And what is it? I think it was Ric Flair that always used to say, "Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat." But a little Four Horsemen wisdom for you all.
There you go.
Thanks, Charles. But anyway, it's been a joy working with these guys. We've gotten to become friends as well.
All these artists, all these writers getting together, working on this, it's got to be more than one issue. I mean, you guys already said more than one issue. How many issues do you plan on putting out in this thing?
Well, initially, with our Kickstarter campaign, which is going on right now, we are looking at initially 6 issues. We're trying to fund the very first issue's production.
Right.
Mostly because we believe in encouraging our writers and artists, and by doing that, the easiest way is to pay them.
Yeah.
So there's a novel concept, unlike a lot of independent publishers.
Right.
but no, we want to pay these guys what a competitive page rate. And our initial goal is to fund issue 1, and then our stretch goals become issue 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And we actually have in mind approximately 12 issues of the regular comic, 2 annuals, and I am writing a holiday special.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I am pulling some of these things from the most heartwarming, tender stories that you read on the internet, and basically giving a twist that makes you wish to all the heavens above you'd never read it. we're tapping into a very dark corner of my soul here when we write these things. But no, it's the ultimate goal is to put out about 15 issues and more if people dig what we're doing and will support us. But our initial goal is a modest one at first with $3,000 to get the first issue produced. And in return, we are giving away all kinds of spectacular incentives that range from PDF and physical copies of the book all the way up to copies of the script and possibility of Ron Fitzgerald performing for you. And we also have like coffee mugs with Ron and Kudrosha on them. Prince.
Kudrosha might do a reading for you.
Kudrosha might do a reading, which is quite the experience, I'm told.
I might do tarot cards for you.
Oh, that's right. You do tarot cards. I remember you doing that before.
Well, yeah, and I have no talent whatsoever in this regard, so I'll just sit by and encourage you.
Well, tell me.
We also have an opportunity for somebody, some generous soul, to become a character in the book. Well, Brian, how could that get any better than that? I'm glad you asked that, Gil. It could get better because we will also write a story for somebody as a monster.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then we have that's for one of the short stories.
Like you see your ex-wife, literally.
Hey, I'm thinking now. Well, now, okay, how do they find your Kickstarter? I know, just go to Kickstarter.com. Oh, what do they search for?
It's not up yet.
Yeah,
we're still in the tweaking the thing, but within a week we are hoping to have the thing live. But we do have a preview link that if you go to the Silver Phoenix page on Facebook,
okay,
if we haven't already, in fact, I will probably do that right now. We'll put up that link and people can take a look and get excited. Tell your friends and
it's an early sneak peek.
Yeah,
we don't even have a video up.
Yeah, that's what we were doing
today.
Oh,
yeah, you were filming the video today. That's right. You got to have a video.
Yeah. It felt so cold that my fingers felt like they were being stabbed and cut off.
And I will say that I am generally not a person who is startled easily. Mm. But there were two instances today where I wish I'd been wearing dark pants, if you know what I mean.
At least the brown ones, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I'd have blended right in. I saw something today that will probably be in the video, and we'll tease it at that. But let's
nice.
Just say I can eat breakfast during an autopsy. This shook me.
Wow. Well, you guys know, well, you probably don't know, but I am a paranormal investigator on the side. It's one of the many things I love
really?
To do. Yes, and I've always heard about this Bachelor's Grove. I always wanted to go there and check it out. You know, I've investigated, you know, some haunted schools, some haunted churches, some haunted... And some of them turn out to be, you know, kind of, well, let me just put it this way. What they show you on those ghost hunting shows on TV, that must take hours and hours to find that stuff. Because it's so hard to find anything really worthwhile haunting. I've only seen one ghost in my entire ghost hunting career. And, wow, it was cool. But
was it a poltergeist?
No, but it sounds like Brian might have had
today.
Yeah, I was going to say Brian might have seen one. But no, I just saw a teacher that was haunting a high school. But who knows what could have happened. I had to take a test. But anyway, so now you got me even more intrigued knowing this cemetery. Because this is one, I mean, first of all, I first heard about this cemetery in a Jim Butcher novel, one of his Dresden Files novels that was mentioned. And then that's when I first heard about it. And then I, as a ghost hunter, paranormal investigator, I kind of like heard about more of it. So it's like, this sounds like a great place. And you had me intrigued anyway with the name of the place. And I'm like, okay, what are they going to do with it? And so now I know you're creating your own universe. So so basically.
Cool. Yeah, because the thing about it is it's been interesting. I've had a couple writers back down because they couldn't write in such a small sandbox. It's like, okay, you only got how much is like six pages, like 200 words or something?
Yeah, the Alan Moore one time worked it out that based on editorial edict during the 60s from DC Comics, that each page should have approximately 200 words on it total, but then allowing for like sound, the size of sound effects, etc. But an average of 200 words
per page.
Per page.
And wow. So it almost comes out to at most 25 words per pound. And you know, some of them are just sentences instead of a couple of sentences.
Right.
And you might be looking at maybe 50 words a page plus description. So a 6-page script might be something like 600-700 words. That's it. That's your sandbox.
Challenge. I mean, I would say for stories, stage plays, radio plays, advertising.
Right.
And I would say that writing comic books is perhaps the most challenging format.
Yeah. I've actually had someone in tears begging me to, you know, please, could you let me just stop this? I'm so sorry, please. I've never been unprofessional like this. Please just let me go, please. And it's almost like the horror of Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove got them. Oh, something weird.
The curse.
Gallagher is working on one of the covers, and we brought my daughter out there for reference. And the weird thing, we couldn't find it. Even though it was there, even though it was obvious, we could not find the entrance to Haunted Tales. I even walked up the path for a while.
Wow.
With them and couldn't find it. It was almost like the cemetery did not want my daughter, who was an innocent, and Stephen Geiger, who is not an innocent, to find the place. It was really weird. We couldn't find it.
But then they let us in today.
Yeah, and this time, we're driving by, we look, and see, oh, there's the pond. Oh, there's the cemetery. And then we see, oh, there's the trail. And it's almost like it opened up and said, please.
You guys are welcome.
And it was almost creepy that it was too easy to find it this time.
Oh, man. All right, so once again, the people need to find your Facebook page, Silver Phoenix Entertainment. Is that how it's listed on Facebook?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or they can go directly to my website,
okay.
silverphoenix.net.
Okay, silverphoenix.net. And yes. So we'll keep an update on when this Kickstarter launches. What's going to happen is I'll put a link on our Nerd Up Podcast website, nerduppodcast.com. And when
Nerd Up goes down.
And as soon as you guys get it going, then I'll put a link there. People can link from the Nerd Up Podcast. And maybe we'll follow up again with more stories about this, about how things are rolling. Maybe even do like a check-in and see how the funding's going. I always like to keep an up-to-date on that. Silver Phoenix Entertainment, so silverphoenix.net, or find their Facebook page. Get your updates. Find out about this. Haunting Tales, at least 6 issues. They're going to do it an issue by issue so that you got to get pledged in the issue number 1. And I want to get in on this. I want to try to get, I'm going to take a look at some of the, that's what I like about Kickstarter. Some of the stuff you get for pledging and for putting money in, you know, not only do we take an active role as a fan, you know, say, hey, take my money, make this thing, I want to see it, but we also maybe get something out of it. And I'm always like that about Kickstarter, getting something out of it.
What's amazing about this is you are actually far more important than the normal consumer. The normal consumer goes to the store, sees the object, buys it, walks out, that's it.
Right.
You, as being part of our Kickstarter fundraiser, it's part of the movement, part of the synergy, part of the creativity, and you directly matter.
Right, yeah. And that's a beautiful thing. It's like, okay, I did this. But, okay, these guys really did the work. I just look good.
So but we couldn't do it without you. No. The thing.
Something else that's kind of neat, too, with Silver Phoenix Entertainment, Inc., is it is 100% female-owned by a young lady who's only 81 years old.
Is that all?
Yeah, my mom owns
wow.
it. So.
Wow.
She does all the professional stuff, all the stuff that snore boring. And I'm the mad fool who traveled across the country in roller skates, helping promote roller derby because I also sponsor roller derby.
Yeah.
And, there's other fun stuff. You want to add anything, Brian?
Can't really think of anything except Silver Phoenix is one of the most diverse publishers I have seen in years, not just in personnel, but also in story matter.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is crowdfunded. We listen to the fans. We, you have a direct link to us, and our ability to bring you the kind of stories that you want to read is directly in your hands.
Yes. And not only do we have stories, we're actually developing games as well.
Oh, wow.
The last thing I'll say about the Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove, one of the things I'm doing is with my different horror titles, there's going to be mentions of different books. For example, One of the issues, we may have characters from Whispers from the Void do some investigating and a little bit of battling there. Baxter's Grove may have a key influence on Zombie Annihilation, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So on and so forth. For some reason, the zombies will not go to Baxter's Grove, and there's reason. In fact, Brian is going to be writing one of the issues of Zombie Annihilation, which is one of our other titles. What's kind of neat is, with Zombie Annihilation, Pascal, a gentleman from Haiti, is working on issues 3, 4, and 5, actually 5, 6, and 7, and I'm writing issue 3, working with a different artist, but Yatasha Warmack, who was one of the writers for Afrofuturism, which basically talks about African-Americans in space and in sci-fi and things like that, was kind enough to write the origin story and the psychology between the evil mad scientist, Dumbudzu, who, she's a female mad scientist, who has decided with her dark invention, or evil invention, actually it isn't evil, but she was able to create zombies with it, and her thought is, why don't I just wipe out humanity so that the Earth can heal?
Oh,
we've been to the planet. And so she's a nihilist who basically feels the best planet to rule is a dead world. Right, so there'll be a little hints of some of the characters in Bachelor's Grove. For example, some of Dr. Zarvin, we'll see Dr. Zarvin in the 50s and dealing with some alien tech from Area 51, and that mixed with the curiosity of that. We have some origin stories and a few other things that could springboard into new titles.
I gotta admit, the one thing I love about interviewing creative people like you guys, you know, writers, authors, artists, whatever, you know, the whole gamut, actors even, is that the creativity that goes into this, all the thinking. I mean, you're sitting here telling me these ideas you got rolling, and I'm sitting there, wow, that's awesome. You know, it's like, let me see it now, but I gotta wait. So, but yeah, you guys, you always have this creative juices flowing, and. You don't stop just with this one. And I know, Charles, I've met with you at a couple of cons. Every time I see, you know, you're representing Silver Phoenix, you've got the roller derby comics, you got the horror comics that you're doing. I mean, it's like you always have a nice assortment of things going on, and you never seem to stop. So, first of all, I want to say don't ever stop, because I'm enjoying everything that's going on.
Give us more money so I can keep doing it.
Yep.
It's so exciting that... even Elvira, in my imagination, wants to become a part of it.
I like how you think, young man.
I can see that. I can see it. All right. Well, once again, the Haunted Tales, or a Haunt, or no, is it Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove?
Bachelor's Grove.
There we go. I knew I'd get it out.
I'm correcting Charles all the time. It's okay.
You know what? I said, this is an example of the type of stories that we may have. Victor Lane, wrote this story, but we have one story about this one guy who's thinking of committing suicide, and he's thinking of crashing his car into a tree. So he starts driving like a lunatic, gets closer to the tree, chickens out, and then he starts driving again, and then chickens out. Then finally, he nearly hits a person, and a person basically yells at him, says, "You know what? I'm hitchhiking. You nearly killed me. You're going to take me where I need to go. Otherwise, I call the cops." Well, then, the driver's like, okay, I'll do that. And they're driving for a while. And the driver tells, the hitchhiker, the boost. The hitchhiker turns it around saying, well, here are positive ways of looking at it. Here's positive ways of looking at it. And finally, they're on the highway. And the driver turns to the hitchhiker and says, you know what? You're right. I have all the reasons to live. I am not going to kill myself. And then the passenger... the hitchhiker grabs the steering wheel and says, I'm glad you said that. By the way, you're dreaming. And he turns the wheel into an oncoming car, and the two cars collide, killing everyone. The driver of the other car, our good driver, and the passenger.
Oh, man.
it doesn't end there. And it's right next to Bachelor's Grove, where you see it over there, where he's kind of pointing.
Okay.
And you know, the driver's all freaked out. He's like, why'd you do this? Why'd you kill me? What happened? And the passenger just kind of grins and smiles, and he says, well, this was destined to happen, but take a look over there. And then you see the spirit of the driver get out and panicking and running away as monstrosities and his shapes start grabbing him, and they drag him down to hell.
Oh.
And he says to him, because of your state of mind, you would have followed the same fate. Before I am the angel of death, but I do have a heart. Enjoy your afterlife. And then you see the gates open up and he rises up.
Oh, wow. Wow. You know, that reminds me of, like, those old eerie and creepy magazines. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been rereading a lot of those lately.
Yeah.
Old stuff.
The good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a little House of Mystery, House of Secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're digging this stuff.
Wow.
Research is having fun.
All right. Well, then you definitely got me on board for this. Well, as soon as you launch the Kickstarter, I'll be jumping on there somehow, some way. Yeah. And we'll see how it goes. All right, well, then let's talk about another project you guys got going on, another one that's near and dear to my heart, mainly because I have many relatives, many friends that are members of the police force, and you guys have the History of Police in America project that you're doing. We've talked about this before on the podcast, but again, it's worth mentioning over and over and over and over again. So, Charles, I'll let you take the ball with this one too and start running. What do you got going on with that? What's the update on that project?
Well, we actually have a fundraiser site. We're starting it through GoFundMe. So if you go to GoFundMe.com/History of Police, you can see that we're trying to raise $6,000 at minimum for the art. My real goal with this book, with the History of Police, is to give away 1 million copies away for free across this entire nation.
Wow.
Possibly Free Comic Book Day, National Night Out, where the police and the community put on a festival that's kind of fun for kids as well as adults. And part of my goal with this book is to help younger people realize that the police are not these horrific overlords, but
right.
They are men and women just like us, you know, who have families and raise their children, and their main job is really to look for infractions, respond, and protect, you know, and to boil it down simply.
Right.
And if younger people can start to develop an appreciation for what they do and a respect, and the officers also, in turn, give that same respect back because there's a mutual understanding, perhaps the tensions will calm down immensely.
Yeah.
And, maybe my book will be just goofy and fun, but what I mean is the thing that's fascinating about this project is it's an evergreen project. You can perpetuate it.
Right.
Keep going, keep growing.
And you know what? And if you could change one person's mind, you've made a difference right there. So,
Yes.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've got family members that are, that wear the badge. And, when you said this, that's one thing. Right now in our society, police officers, they got it tough. They got it tough. They got to do their job. But at the same time, they're kind of being hated on, and it's time that the public kind of realize, hey, there's more to what you see than just the badge. There's people behind this.
Sometimes, and this is the most I'll outstretch is, and I shouldn't be saying this, but I think that if the media were a bit more sympathetic and helpful to the police, we might not have the need for my book.
True. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's the sensationalism that the media is trying to put out there. That's like, okay, you guys sensationalize it from another angle, but they won't listen to us. So you got to put out the book to make them listen.
Let's say the media every day put out a story of police heroism, police helping, police making your lives better. And yes, there is some negative things that happen. And yes, they need to be in the public eye.
Right.
But what about all the good?
Right.
Let's say one kid at a high school kills another kid at that high school. Does that mean that all those kids at that high school are bad?
No, and exactly the point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I liken it to airplanes. If one crashes, it makes the 24-hour news cycle. But you don't hear about the 10,000 other airplanes that take off and land without incident that very same day.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the things. Like recently, I saw a news report of about a police officer that works within the school. You know, have the school officers now, and he was honored by all the students, and every one of them. They made a YouTube video, and it's like you don't see that on the news. It only made it on YouTube is where that, you know, sensationalized, and on a online media. I don't even remember the site that first linked me there, but you don't see that on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, or anything like that. You don't see, like, those good stories.
And you should.
Yeah, you should. And so, okay, so this comic book, you're telling the history of police in America. How far back in the history are you going?
We are starting from the days of the Watchmen, which is, you know, around 1600 Boston.
Wow.
That's the first issue. It's a three-issue series.
Okay.
To pre-Miranda.
Approximately 1960.
Yeah. The second issue would be post-Miranda to a 9/11.
Oh, okay.
And then the final issue will be 9/11 to the current Six Pillars, where our current president, who is enjoying his last few days, put out, which I agree with, you know, different pillars for the public and the police to interact with together. And what's really neat about this project, History of Police in America, is there's so many angles that we can approach with, talk with after this three issues. Evolutions of corrections.
Right.
The creation of the CSI. The history of the detective.
History of the uniform itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people don't know that some of the first police uniforms were actually military hand-me-downs.
I mean, and the thing is, you know, you guys, with the comic book form, can make this history interesting to where, you know, and the average person can say, hey, I can look at that. You know, they don't have to sit down and read a history book. They can look at this and say, you know, I can do the comic, at least in my opinion, you know, I'd rather look at the comic book than read a history book just about any day.
The other thing that ended up really, that's really fascinating, and I'm working with Officer Joe Fitzgerald, who is a current police officer. He hopes to develop a curriculum as well to help, you know, police with their community reach out.
Nice.
Which is pretty neat.
Well, one thing I would like to talk about is that Joe Fitzgerald and Charles and I have talked to various members of law enforcement in different municipalities, and almost every one of them have come back with, once we show them our proposal and our intention behind it, almost all of them have come back saying, this is not a comic book we want. This is a comic book we need.
Oh, wow.
Because... Well, for instance, Joe tells a wonderful story about how years and years ago, when he was pretty much a beat cop in a car in a black and white, he happened upon some young people on Halloween night who looked like they were about to do some mischief. Well, Joe took it upon himself to buy like 15 bags of candy and keep them in the squad car with him. And so he comes up to these kids and gives them the candy and says, don't misbehave, not tonight. Here's a little something for you, and just drives off. Well, then a couple of years later, he happens to be at the station house, and they were bringing in a couple of new dispatchers, and one of them was a girl who he rousted. And I shouldn't say rousted, but he gave candy to that night.
Wow!
In that encounter, and she said that just touched me so much. I decided I had to become a part of what you're doing.
Wow.
And our goal is if we could positively affect just 1% of at least 1 million people who read this book, because we know this book is going to get passed around, so who knows how far the extending reach could be. But if we could just reach out and touch 1% of the people and make them think twice and make them realize that, like you described it, Bill, it's a job. You know, you broadcast, I write. These guys go out and keep us safe and enforce the law. But they are also, and this is something we stress in the comic, that they are not only these guys who've had to put up with a lot of pressure, not just from the public, but from their chain of command as well, which we talk about in the script. But if we can get people to see that, you know, yeah, there's been some bad things that happened, but the police have policed themselves. They are constantly keeping themselves above the fray, if you will.
Right. Because there's a few bad ones out there. It doesn't mean everyone is. And the guys, hey, they realize There are some, and they're going to keep that from happening. They're not out there saying, oh, well, it just happens. They're actually, and you're right. I mean, like I said, this touches me near and dear to the heart because, like I said, my stepson is a police officer. My dad's a former highway patrol. My sister's a dispatcher. And I know these people that you know, these things go on, and they're like, you know, that's not how everybody is.
Exactly. And I've only maybe come into, I've only had maybe a couple of, negative encounters with law enforcement. And it's just mostly I probably caught them at a bad time.
Yeah.
But 99.99% of the time, these guys have been caring and wonderful. And, you know, I find it hard to say enough good about them.
Right.
But this is our attempt to do it.
There you go. And that's what I like about it. So it's an ongoing Kickstarter. Again, what's the address to find? I'm sorry, GoFundMe. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this one's GoFundMe. The last thing I'll say, which is kind of fascinating about the story, we actually encountered someone who had the identical family dynamic mm-hmm. and who were police officers at this convention in Missouri, which was just amazing. The arcing story that ties all the history together mm-hmm. is we had a great-grandfather Irish, a grandfather Irish, father Irish African American, and daughter Irish African American and Hispanic. Her mother died in the line of duty, basically doing intervention. It's been a cop family. That's what they do. That's what you're supposed to do. And the youngest one is not liking the police, how they've been portrayed in the news, and is feeling pretty snarky about what's going on. After she learns the rich, robust history of the police, good and bad.
Don't reveal the ending.
Yeah. You know, things get, that's all I'll say.
Yeah. Nice. Always leave them wanting more. That's
yes, exactly.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. So, once again, what's the GoFundMe? What's the address to get to that again?
GoFundMe/History of Police.
History of Police.
If you go to www.silverphoenix.net, mm-hmm. go to that cover, that wonderful cover done by Tom Kelly of Marvel fame and DC fame.
Uh-huh.
Click on it, and you'll be brought to the site. And the interior artwork is being done by Jeffrey Moy.
Oh, yeah.
Who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I remember seeing some samples at the Crawford County Comic Con of some of the stuff that you guys are doing, and the samples alone were just enough to draw me in. The guy can draw faces. He has so many expressions on his faces in just a little bitty short sample that you guys had, and I'm like, wow, that is beautiful.
Yeah, he's making whoever that mystery scriptwriter is look really, really good.
I would say Brian Kay is the mystery, so... I've heard about the work you put in.
Forbids. Wait, I have no modesty. Yeah, it's my script. I'm proud of it.
The owner of Silverphoenix looks like she wants to add a few words,
too. No, I don't. I'm just listening. But, they're doing very well. I was just thinking about the ethnicity of people in the United States. And my son sitting on the couch is Swedish, Norwegian, German, Russian, Scottish, French-Canadian, Indian, and probably a little French. Because her name is Moisa,
uh-huh.
and English thrown in, so we're all ethnicity one way or another, and we got to find ways to get along because it's absolutely insane what's happened to this world since the 1950s.
Exactly, I 100% agree.
And so, you know, good luck to all of you and the best to you in the new year. And we should do
Happy New Year to everyone
new
out
year,
there.
Kid.
Yeah.
And I also like being your first.
I'm getting out of the room. I'm leaving.
You scared off the odor then.
I'm there.
Well, you know, someone's got to be the first. Okay, anyway. But yeah, I can't wait to see this book. Again, I'm going to put a link on the Nerd Up podcast page for this as well.
Thank you.
All these things, everything we're talking about, we're going to put links to.
Pledge and have your friends pledge. Then have your family pledge. And all of a sudden, magically, when we have the $6,000 the art can get done, then we can start pushing for the printing and then the distribution, and we will make a difference in the world.
Well, I've got a challenge. Anybody that has that is a police officer or on the police force or any kind of law enforcement or has family members, click on the link on the nerduppodcast.com site and go pledge. I challenge every single person listening that has any kind of family member in the law enforcement field to do that. And I can tell you there's three family members of mine that'll hopefully be clicking because I'm hoping they listen to my podcast.
They better.
I hope so. I'm going over their house and telling them they need to listen.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'll make fun of them. I'll tell them their noses are big.
There we go. Well, you know, being related to me just is enough to make, nobody has to make fun of them. They don't, it's like, no, I got Gil. No, you can't move me down. But all right, well, let's move on. We got time for one more thing. Brian K. Morris, you've got a new book out, and
yes,
I've been wanting to talk about this thing for a while. The Tales of Skyman. Okay, good. Skyman, give me the full title.
It's, you have to take a deep breath before we do the whole
title.
The
Haunting Tales of Skyman.
And Skyman's a bachelor and he has a house in the Grove. But anyway.
House in the Grove.
Yeah. No, it is the original Skyman Battles the Master of Steam, based on the Columbia Comics and Ace Comics character.
Right.
Created by Vincent Sullivan, Gardner Fox, and Ogden Whitney.
That's going back a few years for the original there.
Yes, it is. Skyman is that rare breed of Golden Age hero who was a millionaire playboy who fought crime in a gaudy outfit.
I never heard of anything. I'm so silly.
What? No idea.
Yeah, really. That will never fly.
He was only a millionaire?
Only a millionaire.
What a pauper.
What a pauper. Some people have no ambition. But no, it's fully licensed from the gentleman who owns the character, Ron Franz.
Ron Franz is a cool man. Yes. Ron Franz, if you're listening, you're a cool man.
Now that you said something about steam here, is there some steampunk thing going on?
It just so happens we've got a Nazi in steam-powered armor.
Oh, what? Okay.
Yes.
I love it already,
and,
man. I'm loving this.
He also has weaponry based on steam. So it's pretty, we call it steampunk.
Yeah, what the Nazi does is he lights his flatulence to boil the boiler.
All the kraut, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's in chapter 37. He eats a lot. There's only going to be 36 chapters.
Oh, my gosh.
This is why I do publicity for Charles, but he doesn't do it for me.
Anti-publicity.
I've got to be some stomach club. Oh, I can smell the methane.
You got the editor going, right? Gil?
Oh, my gosh.
Get the hook.
All right, so a little bit of steampunk, a little bit of Golden Age comics. I mean, realistically, it sounds like you're really, I mean, with the Nazi theme going, I mean, that's what Golden Age comics were all about, was the wartime that we were going through. I mean, yeah, there were some others, but that's what developed the superheroes we know today, is they were all fighting Hitler or at least some kind of a dictator. In fact, I've been reading a couple books I've been reading, Regrettable Superheroes and then The League of... it's about supervillains, and it's about, like, the worst supervillains ever created and the worst heroes. Those two different books. And the thickest parts of those books are the Golden Age, because they came up with some weird things. But I remember reading about Skyman in one of those. One of his villains showed up in this, and that's why he was mentioned. And, but yeah, I mean... That, the Golden Age is just beautiful, and knowing that you're sticking around with the Nazi in a steam armor, that's pure Golden Age there. So 36 chapters, you say?
And then some. You know me, I write by the pound.
Oh, okay.
You'll get your money's worth, I promise.
And of course, Charles just added another chapter for you, so...
Yeah, thanks, Charles.
So where is this going to be available? I'm sure the usual outlets, your Amazon. Go ahead and you tell me.
Yes, you can buy it in paperback and electronic form. You can either do a search for Brian K. Morris or go to amazon.com/author/Brian K. Morris. And all my books will pop up there.
Mm-hmm.
I will be at various conventions this coming summer.
Mm-hmm.
And my local comic shop carries it, too. And if anyone who owns a comic shop would like to contact me, do so. I'll cut you a deal. I want my book in every bookstore in America.
There you go. Now, where's your local comic book shop? Where's that at? You say local.
My local comic book shop, and I thank you for this, is Blue Moon Comics on Earl Street in Lafayette, Indiana.
Nice.
He said moon.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are, you know what, great fun. That's all I got to say. And you two teaming up on, now, okay, you got the, we'll see, a haunting tale, or haunting tales of...
Grove. I'm the only human alive who can say the title, apparently.
Yep. So you got that one. I can see the creativity flowing between you. Then you got a serious one you have to work with, the history of police in America. And now, Brian, now you've got the Skyman... What's the title of that one again?
Skyman Battles the Master of Steam with a beautiful cover by Pat Boyette. You have to see it. Pat is a artist who worked for all the major publishers and drawn characters like the Blackhawks, the Phantom, Flash Gordon, Jungle Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very talented gentleman. And we have a foreword by comics icon Roy Thomas, who I worked for 15 years on Alter Ego magazine. And he has written the Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, the Avengers, Arax, Son of Thunder, Captain Carrot, the Amazing Zoo Crew. He was Stan Lee's right-hand man during the Marvel Age of Comics, and a fantastic writer of all on his own. And he was gracious enough to write an introduction to this book.
Nice.
And Roy, thank you very much.
Man, I wish you got him to write a Haunted Tales Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah.
As soon as our Kickstarter campaign comes through, by goodness, I will talk that there we go. If the whole thing, I will talk to Roy Thomas. I actually have the ear of a couple of comic professionals that I will approach to do a story for Bachelor's Grove.
Woo! Oh, there you go. There's a challenge for you people also, so get out there.
This is what's so cool about this is not only can you get your willies scared off? Not only can you get your back straight with respect,
yes,
you can also have childhood and adult fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not that type of adult fun. I mean, with
you know
the original Skyman and the Master of Steam.
Right.
I mean, what a cool title that is.
And
here's the great thing about, you know, supporting the original Skyman and Master of Steam is that these people who have these dreams, these fun, you know, innocent retro feel of comics, it's just a great way to complement their craft by supporting us, you know, pledging to us, you know, seeing us at conventions.
We love talking to you.
And we really, really just appreciate all the kindness, all the warmth, all the gift. I mean, there have been times, you know, I've had random people to my eye come up to me and they tell us about a wonderful con experience that they had, or, oh, I read this book. Oh, are you coming out with another one? You know, oh, this book meant so much to me.
Right.
And Brian's writing, you know, what is amazing is that he's so meticulous with his craft that every time you read something, you're emotionally moved or motivated.
Yeah.
Either for the positive or for the negative or for fear. But if you want to let go of yourself emotionally, read Brian Morris's work, and you will be in another world.
That's the best way I've ever heard that put. Yeah, because I just finished his book, Santa Stein, and oh my gosh, I cracked up about the end of every chapter. I couldn't put the book down because of the fact that his writing just grabbed me and kept me stuck in the book. And I wanted to say, okay, what's Brian going to say next? And,
thank you for your review on Amazon. I appreciate that, Gil.
His writing is very addictive.
Yes.
And it makes you angry when you're at the end of the book because you want more, like a glutton.
Well, see, that's why I'm looking forward to these comic books series, because that's like you reach the end of the book, the next one will be coming out. So we got to get these funded and going. So, see?
Right.
There's a way to keep your addiction to Brian K. Morris and Charles D. Moissant.
Woohoo!
You got to be addicted to both of those guys, let me tell you. But both of you guys, hey, thanks for joining me on the Nerd Up podcast. I think we got about everything we could cover in this 1 hour episode.
Except for me sounding like a dialect.
Oh, no. That's right. I got you. Okay. You got to do it because that's the first time I ever interviewed you. You did that. I just love that. You did the first time I'd interviewed you did that, and then you almost scared me, actually.
I scare most people. Yeah. Talk to all the girls.
You were on roller skates when you did it too, so
yes.
Well, again, thanks, guys, for joining me. Once again, nerdappodcast.com. I will provide links to all these guys' websites that we've talked about. Also, the Nerd Up Podcast Facebook page, Silver Phoenix Facebook page, silverphoenix.net. And there's all sorts of ways. Don't forget Brian K. Morris on Amazon. And make sure you put the K in there, Brian K. Morris. I'm not responsible for what you find otherwise. But Brian K. Morris is
not responsible either.
Yeah, you might find a lot of cats.
Yeah, you know. But you check these guys out and definitely get these things funded. I definitely want to see this Haunted Tales from Bachelor's Grove. I want to see that one for sure because that's my favorite storyline is scary stuff. And then, of course, the police, History of Police in America. That's another favorite of mine because it hits the family. I'm telling you, you guys know what buttons to push for me. So, again, thanks for joining me. And that's it for this time around on the Nerd Up Podcast. Like we say every single episode, stay nerdy.
Don't forget to clean your carpet.